You're listening to Learner, an audiobook by Trevor Reagan from thelearnerlab.com. Chapter 5, Mindsets and Learning. Let's do a little recap. In our last bunch of chapters, the main point we made was in order to become a better learner, we need to sort of sustain action that stretches us out of the comfort zone. We need to be the jungle tiger. We also identified that stories and fear are two big barriers to that action. So in order to become a better learner, we need to figure out how to overcome our limiting beliefs and stories and how to overcome fear. Let's start with the stories and limiting beliefs. In order to override these stories and limiting beliefs, we need to follow the lead of a researcher from Stanford named Carol Dweck. Now, there's a good chance that you've heard of Carol Dweck before. Her research has caught fire over the last few years. A lot of people in education, sports, and the corporate world are familiar with the topic. Now, by sheer luck, I was kind of early to the Dweck party. The year is 2013. Wrecking Ball is on the radio 24/7. The Harlem Shake is taking over YouTube. And in between games of Flappy Bird, I was writing a blog. Basically, I would read books, reach out to the author, interview them, and share it with the whole world. And by the whole world, about 9 people would read my blogs, and 7 of them were family members. I got my hands on Dweck's book, Mindset, and it connected big time. I stayed up all night poring through this book, emailed her in the morning, and by the afternoon she already responded, and I actually got to interview Dweck. Listen to this little clip of young, really nervous Trevor stumbling through the interview.
So I think if we, to get started, you just kind of gave a little bit of your background and a brief little introduction, and then we can get into some of the mindset things after that.
Perfect. I'm Carol Dweck, professor of psychology at Stanford University.
Dweck has been studying learning for longer than I've been alive, and what she's discovered is simple but really important.
For decades, I've been studying why some people succeed while people who are equally talented do not. And over the years, I've discovered that people's mindsets play a crucial role in this process.
The way we think about learning can influence how we actually do it. Now, through her work, they've identified maybe 2 big perspectives, 2 mindsets we can have towards skills, towards learning.
Some people have what I call a fixed mindset. They think their basic talents and abilities are just fixed.
It's sort of the idea that we have what we have and can't really change it. It's the idea that some people are born to be good with numbers, other people could never build that skill. Some people born to be great leaders, other people could never get better at that skill. Now, this is important. Fixed mindset is not the belief that we're bad at everything. No, it's the idea that we have the skills we have and those can't really change. So saying, I'm bad at the piano or I'm bad at dancing, that doesn't necessarily mean I have a fixed mindset. That's more about self-awareness. So the key idea to remember here is the research is about our belief in our capacity to grow. Saying, I can't learn the piano, I can't become a better leader, I can't learn math, those are more of fixed mindset beliefs. We can even have a fixed mindset towards stuff that we're good at. Believing, I'm a natural at this. I was born with this skill implies that I don't need to practice. I don't need to put in effort. I don't need to get better. Now, on the other end of the spectrum is the growth mindset.
They believe their basic talents and abilities can be augmented, developed.
So the big idea here is a growth mindset is the belief that we can build and develop skills. That if someone's good with numbers, it's because they built that skill. If someone can't dance like me, it's because I haven't danced enough. So growth mindset is not some irrational confidence that I'm just the best at everything. No, it's the simple yet powerful idea that I can get better at stuff. So saying, I'm good at dancing, I'm good at math, that doesn't necessarily mean I have a growth mindset. Saying, I'm good at math and can get better, that is a growth mindset. I can't stress this enough. When we're talking about this research, it's about our belief in our capacity to grow, our big and small beliefs in our capacity to build skills. I can grow, I can't grow. I can build this skill, I can't build this skill. As you can see, these definitions are fairly straightforward, and at this point, most people can define a fixed and growth mindset. Now, in order to do this topic justice, we have to go deeper. I want to talk about why these mindsets matter, how they actually work, and how we can use that knowledge to our advantage in this pursuit of better learning. Now, like we said, Dweck has been on this journey researching this topic for decades. Two big types of studies they've done: prediction and intervention. Prediction studies are fairly simple. You basically give someone a survey to determine what type of mindset they have. You take that data and compare it against their achievements and outcomes. And what they found in these prediction studies is, yeah, a growth mindset does predict success. People who display more of a growth mindset tend to achieve better outcomes. Great. The intervention studies, I think, are even more intriguing, which is, what happens when we teach people about this? And in the intervention studies, they found, yeah, if you train someone in this field, if you teach them to have a growth mindset, that has a significant impact on their outcomes. Now, if you really get into the weeds of looking at these studies as a whole, two mechanisms really matter as far as effect size is concerned. One is, we see a bigger effect size when our environment supports these topics. Makes total sense. The other, really, really important, is the quality of the intervention matters. When an instructor is allowed to go in depth and really explain this properly, you see a bigger effect size. So, big picture, what does the research say? High quality interventions, teaching people to have a growth mindset, can have a significant impact on outcomes. And this is why so many people are curious about this topic. This is why so many groups are building it into their cultures and environment. This is why when I visited the USA Olympic women's volleyball team gym for the first time, at the top of the whiteboard, it said, job one, growth mindset. Our mindsets absolutely impact our capacity to grow. But why? How? How do those actually work? We need to kind of pop the hood here and look at the way our mindsets affect our actions, especially when we're talking about learning and development. Chapter 6, How Our Mindsets Impact Action. One way to really visualize the power of our mindsets when it comes to learning is through a visual we call the SFCOHTGGAS.
Oh, God, it already has an acronym.
Seeing as how the VP is such a VIP, shouldn't we keep the PC on the QT because if it leaks to the VC?
Acronyms are the worst. Anyways, this stands for the self-fulfilling cycle of how to get good at stuff. Ideally, you and I are hanging out right now grabbing lunch. That's a little noisy and hectic. Let's say we're in a coffee shop. Much better. Now, if we were together, it'd be so easy to show you this visual, but we're not, so we have to use our imagination. So we're in our coffee shop, I have a napkin, I draw a cycle. There are 3 points on the cycle. At the top, we have belief. Belief feeds action. Action feeds growth. Growth reinforces belief. A cycle with 3 nodes. Now, if you go through this cycle from really a growth mindset perspective, you see how important beliefs can be. This cycle works for absolutely any skill, big or small. Big skill could be, I can learn math. A small skill is, I can learn that equation. A big skill is, I can work in this new position within the company. A small skill is, I can learn this new software. When I believe I can grow, I'm more likely to engage in action, learning behaviors, taking on challenges, putting in effort, learning from mistakes, trying new things, listening to feedback. Don't need to overcomplicate it. You could go back to the 5-year-old we mentioned earlier and ask them, what do you need to do to get better at something? And most 5-year-olds are going to say a combo of those behaviors. Work hard, try new things, learn from mistakes, listen to feedback. No kidding. But what I'm trying to illustrate here is that action step of the cycle is fueled by the belief. Go back to the skateboarder. That's a perfect example of this cycle. The skateboarding clip was 2 minutes of action. We could hear it, the crashing, the struggling, the experimentation. Deep down, Jerry the skateboarder believed he could land the trick. That's what fueled the action, and that's what allowed him to eventually land it. This is called the self-fulfilling cycle because the thing at the top usually becomes true, which is great news when we're operating in a growth mindset. I believe I can learn this skill. That belief fuels my action. And if I can sustain enough action, I'm more likely to build the skill, which confirms the belief. Yep, I was right. And every time we pass through the cycle, our belief, our growth mindset is strengthened. We can pick up momentum as learners. The scary and sad side of the cycle, the fixed mindset side of the cycle, works the same. But now at the top, we have our fixed mindset stories. I can't learn math. I can't learn that equation. I could never work in that position. I could never learn that software. Fixed mindset stories rob us of the action. If the action's gone, the whole cycle falls apart. Go back to the skateboarder. What if his belief was, there's no way I can land this trick? What's he going to do? Yeah, you're right. He's either never going to try, I can't learn this, why should I try? Or he's going to try it twice. He crashes and goes, yep, I was right, can't learn the trick. If we never start or give up after two reps, we're probably not learning the skill. And this is why my grandma can't use a smartphone. She looks at any smartphone and goes, what in the world is that? There's no way I could ever learn that thing. Obviously, that's a strong fixed mindset towards this skill. And with this fixed mindset, she's never touched a smartphone, which is why she still has a flip phone. But then if you think about it, millions of grandmas can use smartphones. Is it because those ones were lucky and they were born with the smartphone gene? No, of course not. The only difference between the grandmas that can use the phone and mine, it's simple, but it's true. They tried. And they try because they looked at it with a bit more curiosity, a little more of a growth mindset. They go, huh, how does that work? They figure out how to open it up. They send you weird emoji texts. And pretty soon, they can use the stupid phone. It wasn't magic. They tried. Now, I'm allowed to make fun of my grandma in this program. She signed the waiver. And when I go through this example in our workshops,
this is why my grandma can't use this.
I always get a big laugh from the audience. But the truth is, everyone listening to this right now, including me, we do the exact same thing my grandma does with skills that are way more important than a smartphone. Yeah, the growth mindset side of the cycle can be self-fulfilling. When I believe I could grow, I'm more likely to grow. So is the fixed. If I don't believe I can learn something, I'm probably not going to sustain enough action. I'm not going to practice enough to actually build the skill. And that sort of lack of growth confirms the limiting belief. I can't learn that. And like I said, you can run any skill through this cycle. The examples are everywhere. What if when I'm young, let's say a fourth grader, my parents tell me that I'm not a math person? That's a common story. And if I adopt that fixed mindset story, think about how that shapes my action. Every test, every assignment for years, that story is robbing me of reps and action, engagement, and practice. Over time, it becomes true. I believe I'm not a math person. I don't really engage with that subject. I become not a math person. I believe I'm not a people person. I avoid interacting with people. I become not a people person. Another common but equally destructive story is, what if my parents, when I'm in fourth grade, tell me I'm a natural at math? Now, maybe for one reason or the other, I'm good at this skill, but if I believe that that was something I was born with, that I'm a natural, I might stop working at that subject. And over time, that can catch up with me as well. I can't learn. I don't have to learn. Both of those fixed mindset stories can rob us of action and engagement. Now, let's be real. We all have these stories. If you take a minute to reflect on this, I know you could identify maybe dozens of fixed mindset stories you have about stuff you can't learn. Usually, these are things we pick up on when we're younger, and they're reinforced as we grow older. Stories build the cage. Fear keeps us in it. Our comfort zone, our zoo, our cage is built from our fixed mindset stories. Now, the good news, we can change these. Beliefs are something we can control. Let's live in reality, though. We're probably not going to change all of our fixed mindset stories overnight. Of course not. But something we can do is identify high impact stories we have that are holding us back professionally, personally, and those are the ones we can get to work on first. It might be good to pause a second and reflect on this. What are some of your fixed mindset stories? I think there's three layers of learning that our mindsets have a significant impact on. One, when I believe I can grow, I'm more likely to start something. Yeah, that makes logical sense. If I believe I can learn this thing, I'm more likely to try it. Two, when I believe I can grow, when I'm operating from a growth mindset, I'm more likely to stick with something even if it's not going well. That was the skateboarding example for sure. The belief that he can land the trick helped him sustain the action even after 20 crashes. Three, when I'm operating from a growth mindset, I'm more likely to stay hungry even when things go well. Yes, we achieved this goal. We met this benchmark. Great. That doesn't mean the growth is over. We can continue to grow and get better. Now look at the flip side. When I'm operating from more of a fixed mindset, I'm less likely to start. I can't grow. Why should I try? I'm more likely to give up when things aren't going well. Yep, crashed a few times. There's no way I can learn this. Sort of what Leighton did in the quarter example. And if I do achieve a goal or some level of success, I'm likely to take the foot off the gas. Yep, we're good. I don't need to grow anymore. So obviously starting, sticking with it, staying hungry, these are important layers to really any learning journey. If I'm in a growth mindset, more likely to do those things. If I'm in a fixed mindset, I'm less likely to do those things. Mindsets impact actions. Actions impact learning. Step one to becoming a better learner is building the belief we can. At the heart of any change is the belief that change is possible. Now, if I was teaching you this 2 years ago, we would be done with this segment because I would teach the mindsets how everyone teaches it. Here's what they are. Here's why they matter. Let's identify our fixed mindsets. Now, instead of a fixed mindset, just have a growth mindset. Goodbye. We simply tell people to have a growth mindset and assume that's enough. We can do much better than that now. I want to go through the tools we can use to build one ourselves. You don't need me telling you you can grow. When we understand the building blocks, that's a more sustainable approach. So coming up, three tools to build a growth mindset. But before we do that, sort of a little segue, we need to clear up some misconceptions about this research. Chapter 7, Misconceptions of the Growth Mindset Research. Since the original conversation I had with Dweck in 2013, I've been thinking about growth mindset every day. I've made a bunch of videos about it. I teach it in our workshops. And because I've been doing it so long, I've messed up a ton of things. I want to go through some of these traps that I fell into. And these are common traps that other people fall into when they're first exposed to this research. Trap number one, we try to teach the mindsets through behaviors, not beliefs. If you were to Google growth mindset and go to images, you're going to see 900 different variations of this table comparing growth and fixed mindset. There'll be a green brain and a red brain, and then it goes through setbacks, challenges, mistakes, feedback, effort, and compares and contrasts the growth and fixed mindset approach to those things. Basically, it says when we have a growth mindset, we're more likely to put in effort, more likely to stick with the challenge, more likely to learn from a setback, more likely to use feedback, and our main concern tends to be getting better and growing. On the flip side, fixed mindset, less likely to put in effort, less likely to take on a challenge. We don't deal with setbacks well, and our main focus tends to be on proving that we're good at stuff. And all of these things are true most of the time. But then we take this table and try to teach people to have a growth mindset with it. Hey, in order to have a growth mindset, you need to put in effort, you need to take on challenges, deal with setbacks, use feedback, and when you're in a situation, you need to focus on growth, not just looking good. But the problem is, our mindsets and those behaviors are not mutually exclusive. Having a growth mindset doesn't guarantee I'm going to do all those things. Now, on the other side, in a fixed mindset, it's closer to that, where if I don't believe I can grow, yeah, I'm probably not going to engage in that action. But on the growth side, I can have a growth mindset towards a skill, but still be concerned with how I look. I can have a growth mindset towards a skill and still not put in effort. We don't need to muddy the waters. We don't need to cause that extra confusion. Growth mindset is the belief we can grow. A fixed mindset is the belief that we can't. Does that impact our actions? Of course it does. But we don't have to teach it through the actions. We teach it through the belief. And this feeds perfectly into the next big trap or misconception, which is we sort of oversimplify this. We don't acknowledge that there are other barriers to action than just our beliefs. To help us understand what that means, I'm bringing in a friend, Larry Wilkins. He's one of the best learners and just best people that I know.
With the audience that I deal with in Kansas City, Missouri, a lot of our youth will be considered at risk or have been exposed to gangs or different traumatic experiences, you know, in their neighborhoods or in their home. It's easy for us to say, have a growth mindset, get up and go do it. But I believe that below the surface, there are things that could be going on with an individual or individuals that kind of keeps them trapped within that mindset. It's easier to have a growth mindset or to move forward or to overcome an obstacle if you have a support system. The less support system you have, I think it's more challenging to exercise a growth mindset.
Before I met Larry, before I really understood this trap, I think I was guilty of this. I would simply just tell people, yeah, you got to have a growth mindset, without acknowledging the barriers to this, without acknowledging that we all have environmental challenges that can make this process hard. I've seen some people on Twitter take this too far, though, and go, oh, you shouldn't teach growth mindset to people in tough situations. I don't agree with that at all. Who are we to decide who gets to be exposed to this research and who doesn't? Who are we to hold this information back? Everyone should understand that they have the capacity to grow.
Just because my situation is dysfunctional, everything around me is chaotic, my thoughts don't have to be dysfunctional and chaotic. So while being wrapped up in the midst of the storm or the tornado, I still can focus on saying that I'm here, this is happening around me, but I don't have to be a part of this. It doesn't define who I am because it's all around me. It's in my home. It's in my environment. It's in the workplace. I still have the power to think different and change my perspective on what I'm actually viewing and make the best of that in my own mind and in my own space.
Larry rules, and I've learned so much from him over the past few years. You can check out his website, larrywilkins.com. He runs a not-for-profit organization called Team Air, and I would highly recommend checking out his work. Jack will put a link to Larry's website in the show notes. The final trap or misconception I think is the most common and the biggest, which is when we teach this material, we separate the mindsets out and make it sort of you're either one or the other. You're a growth mindset person, you're a fixed mindset person. That is so wrong. Our mindsets are fluid. They can change depending on the project we're working on, the mood that we're in, the skill we're trying to build. A good way to think of this is sort of a mind state. It's like, in this moment, I believe I can grow. That might not be true tomorrow. That might not be true in 10 minutes. For anyone that's put together IKEA furniture, you know what I'm talking about.
How's that coolant coming along? IKEA doesn't assemble itself, you know.
You're telling me.
Because we go from, oh, I got this shelf, no problem, to there's no chance, and I'm there and back for 2 hours while I'm building the stupid shelf. Think about Layton, the quarter-catching six-year-old. What mindset did he have? I don't know, because he went from hungry, excited, engaged, ready to learn, to that's dumb, in 12 seconds. Our mindsets are fluid. Just because we display a growth mindset once doesn't make us a growth mindset person. I used to show the skateboarding video in our workshops and say, look, he's a growth mindset person. We can't really just say that. Now, what we can say is during that journey, during that particular video clip, he definitely displays a growth mindset for sure. But I guarantee there's lots of things in his life that he has a fixed mindset towards. It's not as cut and dry as people make it out to be. Our mindsets are messy. We're a mix. They can change. But the fact that they can change is good news. A skill we can build is recognizing when we might slip into a fixed mindset, and then we can deploy these tools to gravitate back towards a growth. And now we can head to the chapter that I hope you've been waiting for. How do we actually build a growth mindset? What are the building blocks of an authentic growth mindset? Chapter 8, Building a Growth Mindset. Growth mindset matters. It has a positive impact on our capacity to grow because it influences our actions. And now for the grand finale, how do we actually build one? There's obviously a lot of things we can do, but through literally years of thinking about this and teaching it to others, I think there's three big tools that are the most effective. One, and we're going to do this together right now, a little bit of reflection. Take 15 seconds and think about two things that you're good at. Ready, go. Okay, maybe that wasn't 15 seconds, but if you needed more, there's a pause button. This is my favorite discussion to do during my workshops. I pose the same question to the audience. I say, okay, 15 seconds, share two things you're good at with someone you're sitting next to. There's almost always like a 5 second pause of awkward silence. And you can see in people's faces, you could see the wheels turning and they're like, wait, am I good at stuff? And the answer to that question is absolutely yes. This is a big problem with the learning process we have to fix. We are all good at so many things. We're learning all the time, every week, every month, every year. We're all growing a lot. Yet sometimes we don't recognize the growth. Sometimes we don't give ourselves credit for it. Of course, there's no way I know what skill you just identified. This is a one-sided conversation here. But I do know this. Over 10,000 people are listening to this book right now, which means there were lots and lots of skills identified. All of those skills have two things in common. Once upon a time, you weren't as good at that thing as you are now, and that was changed through practice and experience, which is proof that you learned the thing. I know this seems sort of like a simple exercise, but there's a lot of power underneath it. Remember, the belief we're trying to build, the essence of a growth mindset, is the belief we can grow. I believe I can grow. And this is a backdoor way of reinforcing that belief. I believe I can grow because I've done it before. I believe I can learn stuff because I have learned stuff. Taking a step back and giving ourselves the credit we deserve for all the learning we've done is really important. So many times we're working with people who are displaying strong fixed mindsets, but they're sitting on top of a lifetime of skills they've developed throughout the years. We are all great learners. Almost everything we do in one way or the other is supported by skills that we've learned and developed throughout our lives. Tool number two, learn new stuff. In 2017, I posted a challenge on my YouTube channel.
Yo, this is your official invite to the Train Ugly Anti-Talent Show. Everybody gets to pick something that they are not good at, and then you have 10 days to change that. 10 days to learn a new skill.
Obviously, I have a better mic setup now than I did in 2017. But either way, the Anti-Talent Show was awesome. People from all over the place took part and they learned new things.
It is day one of the Train Ugly Anti-Talent Contest.
Some people would say I'm crazy, but you can never practice enough.
Submission Anti-Talent Show.
A school from Kansas City went all in. They had all of their teachers, all of their students take part in the Anti-Talent Show. Some students learned to juggle, some learned to ride skateboards, some learned to recite poetry, some learned to paint. And of course, no one masters their skill in 2 weeks. But everyone that participates can do the thing. I love this project because it's more concrete than just telling the students, you should have a growth mindset. Because what in the world does that even mean to them? This is more actionable. This is more visible. 2 weeks ago, I couldn't juggle. Now I can. And that was changed through practice. I believe I can learn stuff because I just did. Am I saying you should go learn to juggle tonight? No. But what I am saying is if you recognize yourself slipping into a fixed mindset sometimes, a good way to interrupt that system is to learn something new. It's a reminder. I can grow if I take action. The third and final tool is arguably the most important. It's understanding the research of neuroplasticity. Now that's a big word. There's a lot of syllables in it, but you could argue neuroplasticity is like the most important area of research if you're having conversations about change and learning. The name describes what it is. Neuro is brain. Plasticity means it can change. So this is the research that shows when we grow, when we learn, our brains physically change. Of course, brains are really, really complicated, but the way this works is fairly straightforward. Our brain is a series of circuits and pathways. Anytime we do anything, boom, we fire a pathway. If we fire a pathway enough times in the right way, our brain sort of reinforces that circuit and we can fire it better. So the neuroscientists say, what fires together, wires together. That's the science of how we build skills. Skills are not muscle memory. Skills live in our brain. They are pathways that have been fired over time in the right way. Neuroplasticity is important on two big fronts. One, it shows that our brains can and do change, which is really, really important if we're talking about learning. But it also helps us start to understand the ingredients we need to change our brain most effectively. It ends up, our brains behave a lot like a muscle. And I know that this is a cliche that we've heard about since like third grade health class. Your brain's like a muscle, you gotta work it out. Okay, cool. But if you actually dig into that statement, there's layers to it supported by the neuroscience. Three things we need to change our body and build a muscle: action, struggle, patience. Of course, there's more things that go into getting stronger, changing our body, but those are three big categories. Action. I can't watch you exercise and I get stronger. That'd be awesome, but of course that's not how it works. I have to do the work and exercise a particular muscle to make it stronger. Struggle. Again, in health class, they teach us that in order to make a muscle stronger, you need to challenge it. It needs to struggle. So this is why we run farther, run faster. We add weights. Exercise is essentially struggling on purpose because we know it's through that struggle, through those challenges, that our body gets stronger. Patience. Of course, we want to change our body overnight, but we know that's not how it works. We know it's going to take sustained action over time to really see a change. Our muscles are built through action, struggle, and patience. The same rules apply to changing our brain. I can watch, I can observe, I can listen and read and learn how to do something. I can learn from people's tactics and techniques, but to actually build the skill, I need to fire the pathway. And the best way to fire the pathway is to do the thing. Each skill is a specific pathway. In order to get good at it, I have to fire it. If I want to get better at public speaking, I need more reps and at-bats firing that pathway. If I want to get better at writing, I need more reps writing. Anders Ericsson, remember him from a few chapters ago? He taught me that there's a difference between knowledge and skill. Knowledge you can acquire passively through reading and observing. But to actually build the skill, we need action. We need to fire the pathway. If you're like me, sometimes I get stuck in the knowledge acquisition step of learning. I want to become a better storyteller. I read a book about storytelling, and then I find another book about storytelling and another book about storytelling. I feel like I'm doing the right thing, but I'm just acquiring knowledge. It's actually best to put that knowledge into practice. Read a book on storytelling, phase one. I figure out how to tell better stories. Then I need to go put that theory into practice. Get some reps and fire the pathways. Then once I hit a wall or a plateau, I can go back and find maybe a better framework and better approach to stories. Treat this as a cycle. Acquire some knowledge, go get reps. Once we hit a plateau, go find more knowledge. Two phases of the learning process. Struggle. A neuroscientist from London named Eleanor Maguire did a really interesting study. She rounded up a bunch of London taxi drivers and a bunch of London bus drivers. she selected people to be in the study that had spent sort of the same amount of time on the job. So you could argue all of these people spent a lot of time driving around the streets of London. Lots of action. Then she scanned the brains of all the participants, and what she found is a physical visible change in the hippocampus of the taxi drivers. Hippocampus is a part of our brain associated with memory. So they could see a physical visible change in the brains of the cab drivers. Sort of proof of neuroplasticity. Action changed the brain. However, when they scanned the brains of the bus drivers, there was really no change in the hippocampus. Why would that be? Yeah, the bus drivers are on a set path. They know when they're going to stop, where they're going to stop. I'll be real, sometimes people like me, we oversimplify learning. And we go, yeah, to get good at something, you just got to do it a lot. Okay, that's partially true. But what this study is saying, and many more support, it's also about the quality of our action. When we're the bus driver and on the set path, we know when we're stopping, where we're stopping, that doesn't really change. It ends up when you do something that's highly predictable like that, our brain sort of slips into autopilot. It's like working out without weights. There's no struggle. There's no challenge. And without the change, the struggle, the challenge, I'm sort of in autopilot and my brain really isn't focused on the action. Empty action doesn't lead to change, which is why my mom, who's twice my age, is not twice as good at brushing her teeth than me. Has she brushed her teeth twice the amount of time as me? Yeah. But that's not really focused action. There's really no uncertainty or unpredictability when she's brushing her teeth. She's an autopilot. Those are empty reps. When we're the cab driver, especially in London, it's different. They don't really use GPS. They're going off memory. They're adapting according to the weather, the traffic, where the people want to go. This uncertainty and unpredictability creates a bit of struggle and keeps their brain out of autopilot. It's like working out with weights. Being a bus driver is like hanging out in the zoo. Being a cab driver is spending some time in the wild. What we're really chasing here is focus, and a bit of uncertainty and a bit of struggle and a bit of unpredictability can create and trigger focus. Now, we don't need to go off the rails with this. Sometimes people hear this message and go, oh, we have to struggle to grow. And then we throw ourselves so far out of our comfort zone that we can't function. That'd be like me going to the weight room tonight and loading up the bench press with 450 pounds. I'm going to struggle, but I'm not growing. That's too hard. The optimal amount of weight for everyone listening to this right now to bench press is going to vary. And the same rules apply to learning. I'm not saying go so far out into the jungle that we cannot handle it at all. I'm saying we need to stretch to the edge of our abilities. It's about being willing to go there. There's a couple of researchers from UCLA that do a great job of describing this. Robert Bjork and Elizabeth Bjork, they call these desirable difficulties. Not difficulties that are necessarily fun, but they're desirable in the fact that they lead to change and increase the quality of practice. I know I spent a lot of time on this struggle piece of the equation because I think it is underrated. In fact, we're going to even explore it more later on in the book, in the taking action segment. But let's go back to this brain is like a muscle idea. We said we need action, struggle, and then the third layer, patience. We know we don't change our body overnight, and we have to use that same logic when we learn. So many times we try to learn something, we try it twice, it doesn't work, I go, yep, can't learn that. That would be like me doing one set of push-ups tonight, and then I wake up tomorrow, look in the mirror, and go, oh, I'm not bigger, I guess I can't grow. We would never do that because we know it takes action, struggle, patience to change our body. Well, we need to understand it takes action, struggle, patience to change our brain. The vast majority of us are not going to become professional bodybuilders, but everyone listening to this right now could make any muscle stronger if they worked it out, and probably much stronger than we know. Learning is the same. We're all not going to master every skill we try to learn or be experts in every skill we try to develop. But the research says we can all get better at skills. And the cool thing is, most of the good things in life are skills. Friendliness is a skill. Leadership is a skill. Public speaking is a skill. Math is a skill. The rule of thumb is if someone can get better at it, it's a skill, which means we can get better at it too. Not saying we're going to reach their level, but we can learn enough to be dangerous. Skills are built, not born, and they're yours if you earn them. That's not me trying to make you feel good. That's what decades of research says.
I was for many years a professor at the University of California at San Francisco.
That's Dr. Michael Merzenich. In the world of neuroscience, he's known as the father of neuroplasticity.
And we did experiments. Other scientists had also done experiments earlier and in parallel that showed that the brain, in fact, was massively plastic at an older age. At any age, on any ability, and I could improve it. It turns out that plasticity in the brain is its big trick. It's the main thing that makes it so fabulous. Absolutely, everyone has the capacity to be better at almost at virtually everything. With that understanding, miracles can occur in your capacity to understand or do complicated things that you never thought you'd be able to do. You are designed to be continuously improvable. Nobody's done. Nobody's defined what their limits are. I can tell you, whatever you think your limits are, you're wrong.
Right.
You can be better next week, a little bit, but in a year, you can be a lot better at almost anything that matters to you.
I love that clip because that's not some celebrity trying to sell us something on their Instagram stories. That's a neuroscientist that's been studying brains since the 1970s. And for someone from that field to be that definitive, it carries some weight. Now think about the main points he made. Early on in the clip, he said anyone at any age. That's important, and that flies right in the face of a big story we have in society about learning. Old people can't learn. Now, we have to be accurate in what we're claiming. Yes, our brains remain plastic throughout our lives, but there are phases in life where it's easier to do. The research shows that up to about the age of 25, we can learn a bit more passively. We can soak some things in. But once we get a bit older, we have to be more intentional with our actions, learn more actively. And then that last part is the one that gets me. He goes, absolutely everyone can get better at virtually anything. That's one of the most empowering messages that we can really work to understand and wrap our heads around. We can all get better at stuff. Now again, we have to be accurate. I'm not saying anyone can do anything because that's not entirely true. I'm not going to become a professional football player just because I know about neuroplasticity. But what we are saying is we can all build skills. And as we stack skills and get better at stuff, yeah, usually we can do more things. The hard part is to realize the way our stories rob us of that action and practice required to build the skill. If you're like me, I'm good at telling these stories, but very rarely do I put them to the test. If we put our brain in the right environment and give it some time to do its job, to fire the pathway, to struggle, to solve problems, we'll be surprised. Wow. Our capacity to grow is much greater than we know. We're all different. We're going to go at different speeds, land in different places. Our genes play a role in this. Our personality types can send us in different directions as far as what we care about, what we want to learn. With all that on the table, we can still say we can all get better at stuff. Neuroplasticity is really the bedrock of an authentic growth mindset. Growth mindset is saying, I believe I can grow. Neuroplasticity is saying, you can grow. And if we bring this full circle, neuroplasticity is the antidote to these stories we have about the stuff we can't learn. It's also our helmet that deflects the new stories that people try to give us. Now, someone could tell us, you are not born to be a leader. But between our ears, we can remember, leadership is a skill. Skills are built. Maybe leadership isn't my best skill, but with some practice, some reps, experimentation, I can get better. And that's 1,000 times more effective than listening to and adopting that limiting belief that someone else is giving to us. We need action to build any skill. Our fixed mindset beliefs rob us of that action. We override these fixed mindset beliefs with the knowledge that we can grow, the knowledge that our brain is built to change and grow and build new skills. Easy to say, hard to do, but it's an essential step to take in this pursuit of better learning. In our next batch of chapters, we're going to explore another obstacle to action, fear. We'll see you then. This program is brought to you by thelearnerlab.com. The book is by Trevor Reagan. This episode was produced by Jack. For more resources on learning, please visit our website. Also, we have a bunch of awesome stickers that I want to send your way. All you have to do is rate the podcast or leave a comment, and then email your address to Trevor@thelearnerlab.com, and I'll send you a sticker for free. Thanks.